Our latest in our cloud disaster series is the 2014 StorageCraft outage that resulted in lost customer data. A server decommissioning mistake during a cloud migration resulted in metadata loss and StorageCraft scrambling to help customers reseed their backups. This may remind you a bit of what happened to Carbonite, but this is very different because here the CEO took full responsibility and the company, I think, went above and beyond to help customers reseed as quickly as possible. Persona and I analyze what went wrong, the lessons learned for backup providers and customers alike, and what steps you should take if you ever find yourself with your backups lost in space. We'll discuss the importance of migration processes, backup resiliency measures, and why trust is so critical in the backup and recovery business. If you're not familiar with me, I'm W. Curtis Preston, and there's a reason I'm so passionate about this subject. During my first job as a backup admin, my company lost a huge database, and I couldn't restore it. Since that nightmare, I've dedicated my career to making sure that will never again happen to me or anyone who will listen to me. We turn unappreciated backup admins into cyber recovery heroes. This is the Backup Wrap-Up. Welcome to the show. Hi, I'm W. Curtis Preston, a.k.a. Mr. Backup, and I have with me my career reverse trauma specialist, Persona Maliandi. How's it going, Persona?
I'm good, Curtis. How you been? Are you doing a little better today?
Yeah. So for the first time in a long time, I find myself at the keyboard, in a production environment, administering a very big net backup environment. I haven't been the guy on the keyboard in a while, and it was fun. And doing performance testing and all, you know, normally it's been somebody else at the keyboard and I'm like advising, but this was me in a data center all by myself.
You back 30 years.
It was interesting. It's not quite 30 years, but yeah, it's been a while since I've been the guy, and you know, and standing in what we're going to call a data center. It's really just a big storage closet that happens to have a server rack. We're doing a backup of this customer's environment, and let's just say it's not small. It was 400 terabytes of data sitting on a couple of little NAS boxes. So it has been interesting. I will just say that. Yeah. Standing in a very noisy server room, talking to somebody on the phone. I could barely hear them on my,
just be lucky AirPods. You at least have cell phones now.
It's nice that I have cell phones and chat and screen connect so that they can see what I'm seeing and, all of that. And, yeah, it's been interesting. But speaking of interesting backup scenarios, we're continuing our series on cloud disasters, and we have another one. This is very much in the vein of what happened to Carbonite. It's very similar and yet different. So
same, but
you want to do a quick summary of what happened to Carbonite?
So with Carbonite, what ended up happening was they had their own storage that they were using, right? And people would upload their backups to it. And they had a double disk failure that took down their storage array and they lost all their data. And they basically told customers, yeah, don't worry about it. We're just going to re-upload and do another backup and get all your data back up. And during that time, there were something like, I think it was 34 customers, I want to say was the number, who ended up having another fault in their production data, right, on their laptop, didn't care, crash or whatever else happened, and they were not able to restore their data because there were no backups left.
Yeah, I think the part of their story that bothers me the most is the company's reaction was our stupid storage array vendor right? They blamed it on their storage array vendor and they sued their vendor. And so while this story is going to start out sounding kind of similar, it's very similar in terms of the impact to the customers, but the response from the company is completely different. And so I feel completely different about the company, even though the exact same thing happened on the customer side. So first off, we're talking about StorageCraft, which is a company that had been around for a while and then had been acquired in 2021 by ArcServe, which is a company that has been around a long while. ArcServe goes all the way back to my early days. ArcServe was actually the first backup product I ever tested as a to potentially buy it and running it on NetWare. And that, boy, that brings me back. But so ArcServe has been around a long time. And, you know, it's been sold and I don't know what, you know, spun back out and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. A private equity firm. They got bought by CA. They got spun back out with a private equity firm. And then they acquired or they merged. ArcServe merged with StorageCraft back in 2021. And then this story, unfortunately, happens not long after that. I think it was about 5 months after the acquisition. What ended up happening, Persona?
Yeah, so like you had alluded to earlier, just like Carbonite, they lost customer data, right?
Yeah.
But the way it happened was slightly different. So as part of this, they were moving from their own facilities and migrating to Google Cloud. And they accidentally decommissioned a server before it was already up in the cloud. And it wasn't just any server. It was a server that contained metadata about the backups.
Yeah.
Metadata
is important.
Yeah. So they basically had the same situation as what we had talked about with Carbonite, where they customers lost their data. Now, I think unlike Carbonite, I think that, like you said, they did a much better job of accepting blame and trying to get their customers or their end users back up and running as quickly as possible, doing things like reseeding and really going the extra distance to get them up and running as quickly as possible, including things like, hey, if you have more than 3 terabytes, we're going to ship you a drive so you can upload to the drive and then send it to help speed up the process.
Yeah. So for those not familiar with this process, when you are a cloud backup vendor, the hardest part is that initial backup, right?
Physics is only so fast.
Yeah. Damn physics. So when if you're back, you can back up. I mean, I remember, when I worked at Druva, we had really, multi-petabyte customers. You can back up that amount of data over the internet, but that first backup is going to be something. And that's why we used the Snowball Edge, which was an appliance that you would ship to them and, it already had the technology on there. And then they would back up to that and then that would ship. And it was just, basically a very fancy sneaker net was the way to get the very first copy up there. And you needed one of those Snowball Edges for, I think, about every 75 terabytes, something like that. And so that's what they're saying here. And that, by the way, that is referred to as the seed. For those that don't live in that world, that initial backup is referred to the seed. So when you read the story, you're right. They did accept responsibility. And they said, the first thing that we need to get going is that seed. And so, you were talking about that one of the ways, just like I said, the way my former employer would do it, was they would ship a Snowball Edge. They're shipping whatever they need to ship to these customers in order to make them whole. One additional wrinkle, I think, of this was that this was specifically for their MSP customers. And I don't know what percentage of their business is via MSPs, but that does make an additional wrinkle in that not only are they impacting their customer, which is the MSP, they're impacting the end customer, which is the MSP's customer. But again, I want to give a shout out to the CEO, Brandon Lacey. I like that he doesn't try to pass the blame. He doesn't try to, I don't know. Maybe it's because he didn't have a choice, right? When the other vendor, they're saying, hey, it was our storage array that failed. And that's why, that's why our backups died. In this case, they didn't really have anything to blame it on other than, dang, why is my fingers there? They didn't really have anything other to blame it on other than human failure, because it was a human that prematurely decommissioned a server before that server had been migrated.
Yeah. And that's just sort of a breakdown of processes, right? It's not a technology issue, right? And I'm sure now they have a process in place where they're like, hey, make sure that the data validate that the server is actually up and wherever it needs to be before you decommission. Because
that is probably the biggest disappointment, right? Is you would think you're doing this like major migration. I remember there was Datto. They did an exfiltration out of Amazon, and they built their own private data center. That was a giant. And they said they believed at the time, and I believe this was Datto, they believed at the time it was the single largest exfiltration project ever to leave en masse from AWS. And it apparently went flawlessly. You've got to, when you're doing a migration, you've got to have that check, right? Yeah. You've got to have that check. We're going to kill the thing.
Yeah.
In fact, I wouldn't even kill the thing.
You would just sort of,
right?
Yeah.
I would turn it off.
Yeah.
Right. I remember the very first migration that I had anything to do with, and I'm going to, for those of you, for the fellow gray hairs in the crowd, we were migrating off an AT&T 3B2 4000, which was the AT&T's attempt at a multi-processing server, right? So the 3B2 1000 was the first computer ever built specifically for Unix. Okay.
I love how you just have like these model numbers just like right off the tongue. It just rolls right off. You're like, oh yeah, everyone should know about the 3B2.
Yeah.
Like R2D2. You might as well call it that.
Yeah. What's that?
You might as well call it R2D2.
Yeah. So the 3B2 1000 was the first, because I think it was the PDP-11 was the one that that Unix initially ran on. But the 3B2 was the first computer specifically designed to run Unix, and it ran System 5 and, directly from Bell Labs, right, AT&T. And the 3B2 4000 was, their attempt at a multiprocessing machine, and it wasn't very good. And so we were trying to migrate off of that. And I remember that basically what we would do is we would just kill things. As we believed we had migrated it off, we would turn off a database. We would turn off a server.
And see what broke?
And then see if anything broke, right? I don't know. I guess that's the one surprise here, is that they decommissioned the server to the point of actually, deleting it somehow.
Yeah. Or I know they talk about decommissioning. I do wonder if it's sort of because it's metadata, I wonder if it's like a distributed system and maybe they killed the node without. And so since it didn't have access to the metadata, it's sort of like maybe they weren't expecting that to happen. Right. So even though they say it's decommissioned, I don't know the details. So,
yeah, we don't know the details. We're Monday morning quarterbacking, et cetera. But let's just talk about it. When you're doing a migration, you don't kill the thing.
Yeah.
you don't kill the old one. You turn off the old thing.
Yeah.
Right? You turn it off, and then you wait a while before you actually redeploy it, delete it, whatever. And then I find myself wondering, well, I guess there wasn't a backup of that thing. There wasn't a backup of the backup. which is not that uncommon in
backup systems,
backup services.
Yeah.
Right. And as a result, when that system was deleted, there was no backup of that backup, which I think many people might be surprised by that. What do you think?
No, I think people will be surprised because they think that backup systems are highly resilient. And of course, someone's going to do a backup of a backup, but you have to also realize that there's additional costs associated with doing a backup of a backup. And usually backup systems, people are trying to cut costs, right? Because this is like the tertiary copy. And so having high availability or a replica copy of your backup system, unless it's critical, which a lot of systems are, and people do replicate their backup systems, but not everyone could afford to do that. And especially given that this was for their MSP customers who are also trying to make money and add value, right? They're looking at probably a reasonable offering, right? Without all the bells and whistles.
Yeah. And in a world where services are often purchased on price, not necessarily alone, but where price is the primary motivator for many customers, this is one of those things where no one ever bought Salesforce because I had a really good backup. No one ever bought Oracle because it had a really good backup. They bought Oracle because it had really good features and did the thing they needed it to do. No ad in the world said buy Oracle because our backup is really good, right? And so the same thing is true here. Buy our backup service because we also have a tertiary copy of your data just in case we screw up the copy that you gave us. Nobody's going to even know that, they certainly don't want to pay for it. All they see is that this one is more expensive than that one.
Yeah. The one thing I am a little surprised about, though, is given this is a backup system and it looks like they did have their metadata and data split apart just based on what we read in the articles, I'm surprised they didn't have a self-describing format for the data itself. I know there are other systems which tend to do that as sort of a fail-safe. So I'm not necessarily going to create a copy of the data, but if something happens with my metadata or there's some corruption or whatever else, I should at least be able to build back all the metadata based on the data that I still have access to.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that is another really good feature to have in a backup system, that if the backup catalog, the image database, the database of all the backups, if that gets messed up, it would be really nice if you could rebuild that. And I remember back when I was doing RFPs, and one of the questions we asked was, if the backup catalog gets corrupt, can we rebuild it given the backups? And I do remember at least one major vendor, I won't call them out by name because it might not still be the answer, but their answer was, what they literally, the phrase was, our backup format is so proprietary that even we can't read it if we don't know what's on it. And they saw that as like a feature. By the way, it turned out, interestingly enough, it turned out that it wasn't that proprietary, and other vendors have figured out how to read that backup data. Yeah, as long as it's not encrypted, right? Yep. That's a whole other thing.
So I don't think we've ever talked about this on the podcast before. And so is this something, I know we've talked previously about, hey, here are some questions you should be asking your backup vendor when trying to figure out like what their solution does. Do you think this is worthwhile to throw into that list of questions?
Of, do you have a backup of the backup?
Either a backup of the backup, or if I lose part of my system, like my catalog, can I still recover my data?
I do think that's a perfectly valid question to ask, right? And I think the other question is perfectly valid as well, of what protections do you have? I would point at this story. What protections do you have against this happening in your environment, right? Yeah.
Because it may not be malicious. It's just accidental. Things happen. It's all software. People are writing software, right?
Yeah. You know, so this this story to me is a combination of the KPMG story mm-hmm. and the Carbonite story, right? Because like the KPMG story, and by the way, we have another episode on that. Please feel free to check that out. The KPMG story is one of failure process as well, where you'd like to think that at a company that size, and when you're doing something of this magnitude, when I think back on that story, I don't think they thought this was of trying to fix one person's account. They didn't think that what they were touching was a tool, in this case, retention policies. They were touching a tool that could wipe out everybody's data. They
140,000 people.
140,000 people's data. With no backup. That's a great story. Check that one out. But the big thing with process is you've got to have a very the bigger the project, the bigger the process. And I do remember when the biggest one I remember being involved in, it wasn't a migration, it was a physical move. We moved a bunch of servers from one data center to another data center. We had built a nice new big data center, and we're going to move the servers from the old data center to the new data center. And we had a massive process, and we had tested it from one end to the other, and we outsourced whatever we could. So like we hired a professional moving company to move the servers. We hired and paid extra to have HP come in and unplug the servers and go, Ominous Dominus, you know, you may touch this server, right? And then it got handed to the movers and stuff. And we had this big process. but there was one major failing, and that was from the old server to the new server room. The new server room had twist lock, you know,
power cables,
plugs underneath the floor. And the old server room had the old standard North American two prong plugs. And that was one day where I truly saved the day, because I had and the electricians that would be the ones to help us were busy at the CEO's house putting up his Christmas lights. And so they didn't think we'd need electricians during our big move. And I knew how to fix this problem, right? Yep. I'm like, look, we can do this. I just need to go to a Gray Bar electrical store. And there's one down the road, and it was closing in 20 minutes by the time we realized what we needed to do. And I got in my car with my boss, and he looked at me and he says, I will pay the ticket. Just get us there. And I drove and it was raining. There was water everywhere. I'm driving to this Gray Bar, and I've got it. It's closing in 20 minutes, and it's 15 minutes away, right? I don't have time to play. And I remember hydroplaning, going around a big semi, and I remember swerving around a corner and all this stuff. And I remember that when we got there, there's that scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles where Steve Martin's fingers are stuck in the dash.
Yeah,
That was the way Lou was when we got there. But we walked up to the door, and it was 5 minutes prior to the closing, and the door was locked, and they pointed at their watch. They're like, they're pointing at their watch as a time, and I pointed up at the clock on their wall, and I was like, no, it's not 1 o'clock yet. Open your damn door. And then I was like, please
let me in.
Please let me in. And we got it. And we bought all the stuff. And I non-traded, non-whatever electrician, but I was trained as one in the Navy, which at that time was only like 5 years prior. And then we wired adapters from A to B
twist lock to,
saved the day. Anyway, you got to test your process, and you got to be ready for failures in your process. But I think that, so the two big, this, this one, I feel very different. Like I said in the beginning, I feel very different about this one versus the Carbonite one.
But why?
Because they didn't try to pass the buck.
Is that really the only difference in your mind? Well, I think also in the Carbonite case, the only reason we heard about it is when they try to sue the vendor, the storage vendor.
Yeah. That's a good question. Would we have ever heard about the story if they, I don't know. I'd like to think that it would still have made news, but all we heard about was the fact that they sued their storage vendor. Yeah. In this case, the article, right? It starts out with this quote from the CEO, right? In terms of magnitude, it's the only thing I'm thinking about waking up and going to bed every night. It's orders of magnitude more important than anything else that I have going on in terms of operating this business, says the CEO, right? Yeah. Of his company trying to bounce back. Now, I didn't find, this was almost 2 years ago now. I didn't see an update on what happened. They were saying, we're trying to get people up and running. I didn't see any stories like we did with the Carbonite about some customers that actually lost data because they had to restore something while they were trying to be seated. We don't have any of those stories.
Now, I know you're a big Reddit fan, and I know you probably were browsing threads about this. Did you see any, like, what was the sentiment in those threads from end users, customers, that if you recall any?
Actually, that's a good one. Let me pull up that thread because I didn't look too much at the thread. This is funny. Seems like a backup company that loses backups is no longer a backup company, but a data disposal service. I see a pivot opportunity. They should certify these backups as destroyed and issue certificates. I'd say the Reddit response is typical of every response with a cloud outage. There are people that are just, saying, the cloud sucks. And, the cloud is just another computer. It's just another service. And you have to verify it just like you verify every other system.
Yep.
Right. And there were some comments in the thread saying that, one of the reasons that ArcServe and StorageCraft merged was that they had been going down for a while in terms of quality of service. Again, these are other people's comments. And that they weren't that surprised at this event.
Yeah.
But they're still around. They're still running. Just like Carbonite is still around and still running. I wish them the best. This was a major migration fail.
Yeah. And it's also one of those things. People have, like, once you lose that trust, it's difficult, especially in the space where you are that last line of defense.
Yeah. I mean, people are still on LastPass.
Yeah. Let's not go there.
Yeah. What's that?
Let's not go there.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Well, not some huge lessons here, but the big one I think here is, I like the mea culpa that the company did. And I like that they knew that their priority was getting the next backup. But unfortunately, that's going to take a long time. And the biggest lesson here is if you're doing a migration of any kind, don't go shooting the other servers until you know that it's fully migrated.
Yeah.
What
is there any lessons learned for the end users? What could they have done? I don't think there's anything that they could have done in this situation.
Yeah, the only thing I, in terms of trying to identify, I mean, what's a vendor going to say? This is the difficulty with the cloud. We've discussed this in previous other things, is it's hard to actually verify. If you say, do you have processes in place for if somebody over there accidentally, blows up a server, do you have processes in place to be able to bring that server back? Of course they're going to say, that's what they're going to say. The one thing you could think about, again, this is expensive, but people talk about using a service that puts stuff in more than one place or using more than one service, but people don't want to pay for one backup service, let alone two. Could they do that? Should they do that? Sure. Will they do that? Nobody does that.
Yeah. No one's going to spend the money in their budget on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard enough to get people to do backups in the first place. It's hard enough to get them to properly secure those backups. They're not going to pay for a completely separate just in case they're, you know. I will say having something like StorageCraft or Carbonite die and lose all your data is not the same as losing all your data, right? It's all the backups of all your data. And there will be some, could be some ramifications to your business if you need to restore. But statistically speaking, you're not probably going to need to restore today. Yeah. Just in terms of statistically, right? What, it's not the same. So, you know.
So, okay. So if I was an end user, I get a notification from StorageCraft that says, hey, by the way, we had an issue. We lost all your backups. They're going to say, okay, I'm going to try to help reseed, right? Get all your data up there. Before that happens, because like you said, it could take weeks, it could take months, right? What is the first thing that the end user should do at that point? Right. Once they get that first notification to make sure that they don't end up losing all their data in case something happens to their production copy.
Well, I'll say this. You got any big projects in process? Maybe you should pause those projects. Right. Any big changes, any big maintenance windows? Maybe you should put a pause on those maintenance windows. The other is you should go back to old school backups for the time being for anything critical. You know, you should make a local backup of any kind. A backup of any kind is better than a backup of no kind.
Yeah.
Right? That's a really good question, yeah. Right? I would put a pause on projects and I would see what I can do to get some local backups of stuff, right? There are plenty of open source tools out there that can, you know, surely somewhere you got some disk and then you've got some super critical servers that you really don't want to lose. Get some local backups of those.
Or I know you had mentioned in the past, right? You really like the iDrive service, cloud service.
Right.
Right. For just doing a quick backup.
Yeah. The only problem with that is, you know, again, it's physics. Just go up, right. Yeah. So I'm just trying to think of something that you can do quickly.
Yeah.
You know,
copy it to a different machine, right. Go buy a couple external hard drives. Yeah.
Specifically for those super high value, super highly critical servers, you know, things like backup servers for other customers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right. Well, thanks for helping me walk through that. That was a really good question there at the end, Persona. Thanks for helping me walk through this.
No worries. That's why I enjoy doing these podcasts because it helps all of us, right? Just figure out what should we be doing in case this ever happens.
That's what we're trying to do, is to pass on these lessons to you, the listener, so that you can learn from other people's troubles, unfortunately. But you're why we do this. We want to turn you into a cyber recovery hero. That's a wrap.
The Backup Wrap-Up is written, recorded, and produced by me, W. Curtis Preston. If you need backup or DR consulting, content generation, or expert witness work, check out backupcentral.com. You can also find links from my O'Reilly books on the same website. Remember, this is an independent podcast, and any opinions that you hear are those of the speaker and not necessarily an employer. Thanks for listening.